From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I do worry that people will relax the mitigations that we've asked them to follow, the masking, the hand washing, the keeping physically distant. Those are things that have been proven to have a very positive impact on our state, on our positivity rate going down as low as it is.
I do think that we can open up indoor dining and do it safely, and I think sooner rather than later. This is something that I have been advocating for some time, but we've not been able to make progress with the state, which is unfortunate. Restaurateurs who have been absolutely devastated and crushed by the stay-at-home order can't depend and really condition their livelihood and that of their workers on whether or not the weather is nice on a particular day.
And officials are hammering out plans on how we will vote safely in November. At the top of that list is having more voters mail in ballots.
This legislation is aimed at providing the most access and safety to the general voting public in Illinois. It is specific to this general election, November 2020. It's our responsibility to plan and prepare, and this initiative is simply that.
That's the state senator, Julie Morrison, a Democrat, talking about the expanded vote-by-mail program, which the governor signed into law this week. Also, we heard from Chicago's Mayor Lori Lightfoot and the governor as the state moves closer to Phase 4 of the economic reopening plan. But some want to see things move even faster. We'll talk about it all on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. In our panel, practicing social distancing from his home, we have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us also from his home, Bill Wheelhouse. He's back reporting for public radio stations in Illinois. And our guest this week is Heather Sharone. She's a reporter for WTTW and Chicago Tonight. Heather, thanks for being back with us.
Happy to be here.
And I'll start with you, Heather. This move toward reopening, the next phase for most of the state could take effect in about a week on June 26th. And this would be big. It would allow larger gatherings. Restaurants could have people dine inside. And Mayor Lightfoot weighed in on that this week. Talk about what she had to say.
Well, this has been a source of frustration for the mayor dating all the way back to the beginning of the stay-at-home order. And she has several times expressed concern that it's not going to be enough to allow Chicago restaurants to serve a limited number of diners outside. Chicago's weather is notoriously fickle, and she is concerned that if, as she says, restaurants aren't allowed to open to in-person diners sooner rather than later, more will go out of business. And this has been a point of contention between her and Governor Pritzker, who have been doing their best to move in lockstep through this pandemic. The governor's office pointed out that the city moved into its third phase of reopening about 5 days after the state did. So with Mayor Lightfoot's permission, Chicago restaurants could start serving a limited number of inside diners as of Friday. However, the mayor says that Chicago won't be ready to move into its next phase until July 1st at the earliest. So there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
Now, for weeks, Heather, I've heard the mayor warning people to stay inside, even making threats virtually against them. This almost seems to be a bit of a change, though.
It is. I think that she sees house parties where, you know, there's no social distancing as very separate than businesses following the city's rules, following the regulations. She sees those as two very different issues. However, I think there are a lot of people who see them as very similar, and she has faced repeated questionings about whether it's not a double standard to come down so hard on people going to their friend's house when lobbying to allow restaurants to open, even while we are very much in the midst of the pandemic, although Illinois appears to have passed its peak.
Well, Bill, we've been watching for weeks some of those metrics come down in the way that the governor has talked about that needed to happen to move to the next phase. We've seen the number of cases that are being reported come down. Testing is going up. But there's no doubt that politicians are feeling some pressure to move these reopenings up.
And certainly Illinois Republicans have been the ones voicing that throughout. They've really tried to keep on the governor's case about opening sooner than his system allows. They would rather see 2 weeks in a phase than a month, things like that. And then that led the state Republicans to file a federal lawsuit against the governor this week. And in that suit, they're saying their First Amendment and I believe 14th Amendment were being violated. What they're saying is, if churches are allowed to open up and if people are allowed to protest, then a political party should also be allowed equal protection under the law and have gatherings. They say that after they came off a weekend meeting of statewide Republican officials done through remote meeting. But their concern and their angle in this suit is these others are getting to do that, and we should be granted a similar carve-out in these executive orders for that. And that's where they filed the suit. And in some respects, I thought it was kind of an interesting angle that they took there.
Shirley, you think they have a point on that? Or
It occurs to me that it's, and let me say that I'm the product of 16 years of Catholic education. So I think it's almost sacrilegious to compare a political party to a church. So that's my own personal perspective. And I also think there's a certain disconnect because the Republicans are arguing that we can't have an in-person convention because we would be arrested or we run the risk of being arrested. On the other hand, you look at all the rallies that occurred here in Springfield and in Chicago, arguing that Pritzker's orders, the stay-at-home orders, were violating constitutional rights. There were prominent Republicans there, including probably here in Springfield, most notably Representative Bailey. And I don't recall any of those folks being arrested. I don't recall police coming in and breaking up their rallies. So it seems to me that their argument that, well, we can't do it, doesn't really hold true, and maybe it's as much as anything just another way to take digs at Governor Pritzker, because they are not happy at all that the economy is shut down, and it's for reasons having more to do with the economic well-being of people, business people, than it is a concern about their First Amendment rights to get together and raise a ruckus.
Well, there's been no...
Although I also think, Charlie, that they probably do want to be out having some campaign rallies at some point hoping to do more in-person political gatherings because an election is coming upon us.
Well, let me ask you, if there were a campaign rally, do you actually think that the state police would come in and break it up?
Probably not.
Well, now we have had this, going back to this indoor dining discussion that the mayor has been having in Chicago, we have seen the outdoor dining taking place. What are you hearing about that, Heather, as far as, how businesses, how restaurants, is it allowed? I'm guessing they're getting a little more business from it, but it's not sufficient, is it?
That's right. We're talking about capacity limits no more than 25% of what they were allowed to do before the pandemic. And even if you turn those tables as quick as humanly possible, that's just not going to make up for, lost revenue. The other thing that started this week in Chicago was a program to allow restaurants to take over some streets to expand their outdoor dining areas. And that is very much a work in progress and an experiment in progress. And people who want to see less car traffic and more space for pedestrians and bicyclists will be really looking to those results to see how they work.
Well, we know that other...
And in Chicago, Heather, didn't the mayor also allow for bars that don't serve food to be able to have outdoor drinks?
That's right. That started just on Wednesday. So that was a big relief to a lot of bar owners who felt like they were being treated unfairly just because they don't have a food service license.
But Heather, the Chicago area has been hit pretty hard with this COVID-19 pandemic, maybe more so than other parts of the state. And yet, what is the mayor saying, and maybe what Governor Pritzker, what are they saying when it comes to the fact that reopening is likely to cause at least some surge in cases once again? We're seeing that in other states.
Well, I think they're very concerned about it. And I think Mayor Lightfoot is especially concerned because the pandemic in Chicago has hit the Black and Latino communities so much harder. Approximately 75% of all infections are among Black and Latino Chicagoans, as are 75% of deaths. And I think the fear is if there is a surge, which most people expect to some extent, it's those communities that will really bear the brunt. And I think in the backdrop of the protests of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis police custody, I think that is something that is very, very much on top of mind for the mayor, and I imagine also the governor.
And Bill, when we see these types of restrictions start getting lifted a little bit, it's human nature to think that, oh, things have gotten so much better that maybe I don't have to be as concerned. And from what I've been seeing when I'm out, you go to a lot of places, many people are wearing masks, they're social distancing as best they can. But I'm also seeing a lot of people who are not doing so. And I would guess that a lot of them feel as though they're not at risk. And doesn't that seem to be the balancing act here, that you're wanting to get the economy reopened, but at the same time, you're trying to send this message that this is still a problem?
It is tough, and you have you're fighting on several fronts. You have people that just want to get outside and go somewhere. You have that. You have other people who feel they're making a political statement by going somewhere. And so you have this mix of different views that are getting people out there. And I think that causes some problems. And I think they need to be grateful right now that it is warm weather and there does seem to be outdoors a less of a tendency for the illness to be passed on.
Heather, this has also created a lot of economic hardship, not just for business owners, but for others as well. And some of that has shown up in people being unable to make rent payments. There were some announcements this week that they're going to extend this ban on evictions in the state. Talk about that if you could.
Well, I think that there's a real concern that once this next phase started, that there was going to be a huge wave of evictions that were going to, again, fall mostly on the poorest neighborhoods in Chicago and throughout the state where predominantly Black and Latino people live. So the governor extended his ban on evictions until July, which I think the city was surprised by, because they moved ahead and passed an emergency ordinance this week that basically extended the ban on evictions in Chicago for an additional 2 months after the governor's order ends. So that would put us in September for that to happen. And the city is working very hard through a number of grant programs and other initiatives to avoid that wave of evictions, which will exacerbate the city's already serious shortfall in affordable housing, which DePaul University has pegged at nearly 120,000 units.
And Charlie, before we move off of this topic here, I did want to mention that, you know, going into phase four, there may be some folks who think, oh, well, the economy is going to turn right around now because there's going to be more openings allowed. But you still have a lot of people, and I think yourself included, who are probably going to be waiting before you go out and patronize a business or eat inside at an establishment. So this is still going to be a long road.
Yeah, I think it will be. And I'm a good case in point because I'm someone who's a senior citizen. I'm 78 years old. And I'm also diabetic, so there's two strikes against me. So I'm not going to be one of the first people lining up to go to one of my favorite restaurants in person. And I think there will be other people who have compromised immune systems or who are maybe cancer survivors who are going to have the same hesitancy. Now, if I were 25 years old and in great physical shape, I wouldn't worry about it so much. But from what I've seen and the stories, the national economic stories, the economy does not seem to be bounding back that quickly. People aren't being rehired back to their jobs, and one of the reasons is that there seems to be a reluctance, even in places that have opened up, for a lot of people to patronize these public venues to the same extent and the same numbers as they did before we got into this pandemic. And so that is a big concern. And as I've said before on our show and in other places, the problem isn't the 25-year-old who, even if they get it, it'll maybe be like having a bad case of the flu or maybe nothing. It's the 25-year-old grandma who the 25-year-old might unwittingly transmit the disease to, who is going to be the one who bears the burden.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Bill Wheelhouse, and Heather Sharon with WTTW in Chicago Tonight. Well, let's move on to some legislation that got signed this week. And by most people's terminology, it's been called vote by mail. It's an election measure. There were a lot of other things in it. But the main thing that's been focused on is this mail-in voting provision that's put in there. And Bill, you covered this when it passed in the legislature's brief spring session here in May when they came back to town. Now that's already allowed in law that people can ask for a mail-in ballot. What's the change here?
Well, one of the changes and the big focus on the mail-in is that it is expanding the pool, or at least the notification to those who are eligible. Nearly anyone could vote by mail if they just requested an absentee ballot. This will require that applications be sent out for people that have voted in the 2018, 2019, or any of the 2020 elections thus far, and it will give them the opportunity to, and they could receive periodic reminders beyond that, that they are eligible to vote by mail. The underlying argument is that this is needed in a year when a pandemic could be a problem during the fall season, and that people this will prevent less crowded polling places if people take part. And the measure also allows for things like in-person voting. More hours will be available to do that in the weeks leading up to Election Day. But that is the main thrust of the vote by mail. There's another one where you can drop your ballot off into what is an allegedly secure mailbox. This passed along party line votes at the time. Democrats were behind it, saying it addressed COVID. Republicans were trying to present it as ripe for fraud. And there might be those opportunities if somebody, I guess, was able to break into one of those, not mailboxes, but deposit boxes for voting, although there were some safeguards added. So that is where it came through, and I know President Trump, just in the last 48 hours or so, had said that states expanding their vote by mail program could hurt his campaign.
Well, he's likely not going to win Illinois. It's a pretty blue state. But Charlie, is this a big deal? This move forward?
Well, I think it is, in the sense that it will make it easier for people like myself who have, as I mentioned earlier, who have reasons for not wanting to hang out in public, to be able to vote more securely. I actually voted by mail in the primary for the very concerns that we've mentioned. And the process seems pretty secure. And if I'm not mistaken, there have not been studies or examinations of past practices that have shown widespread fraud in the use of mail-in ballots. And as you said, in terms of the national election, it won't make any difference in Illinois because barring, some unforeseen circumstance, Illinois is going to vote for the Democratic nominee for president. But it could be important in some down ballot races, particularly for the legislature, for Congress, in some areas where the incumbent is not quite as strong. And may face a challenge from the opponent from the other party. But on balance, I think, just as a philosophical point, anything that can be done to encourage more people to participate, encourage more people to inform themselves and vote, I think is good for the health of our state and our nation.
Heather, you've covered this as well in the signing of it this week. What are your thoughts on this piece of legislation?
Well, what really struck me was the governor saying when he announced that he had signed this legislation that voting by mail was the safest way to vote this November. And I think that means that election authorities are already under a really tight deadline crunch to get these notices out to voters, but they're going to have to prepare for a huge surge of mail ballots. In Chicago, about a third of all votes cast in the March primary were cast by mail. And of course, that was just the very beginning of the pandemic. Election Day was one of the last days I spent reporting under normal circumstances, so it sticks out in my mind. And that is going to do a couple things. One, it's going to mean that we reporters are going to have to be pretty patient on the night of November 3rd, because all of those ballots won't be able to be counted immediately. And two, I think that we have to watch very carefully that people who request ballots get ballots and that those ballots are returned, because, of course, we've seen problems and slowdowns with the post office in places in the most recent primaries in Wisconsin and in Georgia.
Bill, they made this clear. This is only for this election cycle this fall. But if things go well with this, pretty good chance that we could see this become more of the permanent law, right?
Right. And there are always those seeking to increase the ways to vote, to make it easier to vote. And Charlie referred to a lot of that. And I think that this is the trial run for such a system. And so that we, even though this expires after the election, I would anticipate that we'll see some kind of measure down the road to increase vote by mail.
Well, I did want to save a couple of minutes here. And Heather, I'm going to go back to you on this. The U.S. Supreme Court with a landmark decision this week. It's been known as the DACA decision. It affects about 20,000 young people in Illinois who have legal status now, thanks to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that was launched under President Obama. They will now not face the threat of deportation, but just wanted to get your thoughts on this. It's also not a completely done deal that they don't have this hanging over their heads, right?
That's right. What it does is that it means that there's no imminent threat of deportation for many of these people, thousands of whom work in hospitals and healthcare facilities responding to the pandemic, I want to point out. But it does mean the decision does allow President Trump to basically try again, and to this time to do more to justify his decision to end DACA. The decision written by Chief Justice John Roberts basically said, you might have the authority to do this, but you did it in an arbitrary and a capricious manner, so this doesn't pass muster. And we saw on President Trump on Friday on Twitter threatening to basically start back from zero. So it's sort of, rather than a complete stay of execution, a pause of this great debate, and it will doubtless be an issue in the presidential campaign as it ramps up toward Labor Day and after Labor Day.
And only about a minute or so left here. Bill, let me go to you, because this announcement came down late last week. Illinois state fairs are being canceled for this year, both in Springfield and DuQuoin. We talked about political rallies. You always see those at the state fairs. And, of course, you see a lot of other events and things. And many county fairs are also being canceled. This is quite a blow for the economy, certainly of the Springfield region and even in southern Illinois as well.
And the communities will say it will damage the economy, and I presume they are correct. And a lot of vendors at the fairgrounds do a bang-up business every year as well. But in a sense, even if things were seeming a little more safe, it's almost difficult to say how the attendance would have been at the fair in such a weird year. So it probably makes sense to cancel from more than one perspective this year.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll go to you first.
Well, if you're someone who really enjoys betting, you can do it from your home now. Earlier this week, the Rivers Casino and Rush Street Interactive announced that they are now taking online or smartphone bets. And they're the first in Illinois to do so under a law passed last year that provided that opportunity to casinos. And the law originally said that you had to go and register in person at the casino before you could bet online. A couple weeks ago, the governor signed an executive order saying that that was removed temporarily in light of the pandemic, and so you can do it by smartphone or online. And you might say, well, what is there to bet on? Because all the major sports leagues haven't started up again. Well, you can bet on soccer, you can bet on golf, you can bet on motorsports, you can bet on UFC. And next month, the NBA, the NHL, women's basketball are all set to start up. And for Illinois, this online betting could produce as much as $100 million a year in revenue, and that money is earmarked for the non-road and highway and bridge portion of the capital program. So it's revenue that the state really does need.
All right. Heather?
Well, Mayor Lightfoot had some news at the very end of this week's city council meeting. She said she hoped that it would be the last remote meeting and that there were plans underway to meet in person, and that will probably have to take place not in the city hall council chambers, but somewhere else where aldermen, their staff, the press, and the public can practice social distancing. So I think that would be a little bit of uncharted territory for Chicago political history buffs, but I know I and many reporters are looking forward to not having to squint at our computers to try to figure out what is happening in the sometimes very fast-paced city council meetings.
And Bill?
And I just wanted to note the passing of kind of a star in political circles, Illinois Democratic political operative Rick Davis passed away this week at the age of 68. He wrote the straight shooter commercial that some might remember when Dawn Clark Netsch ran for governor and had her with a pool cue. He also wrote a book that was quite good about Chicago Bulls star Bob Love and how he overcame stuttering later in life, and he was behind the mascot for the Secretary of State's safe school bus driving and things, Toby the Tire, a mechanical tire that came up and talked to me at the state fair. I didn't know who was behind it, but it asked me questions that I knew Toby the Tire knew me. Rick Davis, a good guy.
And that's all of our time for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Bill Wheelhouse, and Heather Sharone with WTTW and Chicago Tonight. Get a podcast of the show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.